doing?
And it's not a chopper, dude. It's supposed to be fun. We're just hanging out. So, but what I love what you do. I admire you because you are who you are and you don't care.
No.
And you lean into who you are.
Yes.
So when I see you, I think authenticity. I think, you know, basically what this podcast is, you are who you are. You can be vulnerable. You can laugh at yourself. So tell me about you as a business person. So did you always do something business related? I know you did sales at one point.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I have so many. I need to sit down and have a list of things. Sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, I sold Mary Kay also. I drove a Mary Kay car. I'm like, oh my gosh, I was selling Avon. At one point, I did a lot of different things, but I think my attitude in life and in business basically is rooted observing my mother doing things just to feed us as kids. My mom used to make bread to sell, peanut butter to sell, and then she'll be at the market, flea market, not the flea market in America though. It's sitting under the sun in Haiti, selling whatever it is that she can find so she can feed us. So maybe my subconscious registered those details. And now I'm like, I cannot be lazy. I cannot be. It's like all that, all my childhood, I've seen her basically go after what she wants I've observed her do what she thinks, what she thought was going to bring the money home.
Mm-hmm. And what did you learn from her? I mean, you know, is it her attitude?
Resiliency.
Yeah, okay.
My third book, you need to buy it. I'm not going to give you one. You need to buy
it. And notice how you said my third book.
Yes.
Some people haven't written one book.
Yes. Well, I am very, I was a kid, I always dream of writing a book. And then one day I decided, not one day, my mother was getting sick a lot. And I wanted to honor her through a book because she didn't know how to read and write when she was a kid. And then now look at her daughter being on Michael's podcast and all of that.
Oh, come on.
Because that's big. Sweet. I'm not even from the capital of Haiti. I'm from a little town in Haiti. To be able to have been able to compete for a full ride scholarship in the U.S., to come to the U.S. and study, that was huge. Considering that my mother didn't know how to read and write, and then to raise daughters. Now, one of my sisters is a lawyer like you. Admire what you guys do. I'm not built for that, but I admire. And then one of my other sisters, she's a teacher.
Wow.
And then, and then to look at what she's bought from her bare hands, selling bread, sugar, wool and dark brown paper, pieces of paper, and to see me here today in 2022 talking to you, it's amazing. So I think what you're seeing or what you're observing, it's a direct replica of my mother. I'm hoping that one day I'll be like her, but she is a resilient woman, persistent, and goal-oriented. She didn't know that she was all of that until I look back. I'm like, wow, how did she do it? It's like keeping her mind on what she thought was good for her to do in order to take care of us. So when I mentioned my third book earlier, basically I'm going to be talking about her childhood because her parents gave her away because they couldn't feed her. And then that family she was given to basically mistreated her, abused her, beat her up every day. She was saying anytime they were mad for something, the kids beat her, the husband beat her, the wife beat her up. And then in 2017, I was working on the book and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to hear all the details of what went through.
So the book, is it you interviewed your mom? And
I wanted to, but she was dealing with dementia when I got there. And she died a year later. And she didn't see the book published before she died.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
But I'm hoping she did get to see you and some of your success.
Yeah, she knew that I was doing okay. Because I always send the money home anytime I have some money. But I don't think she understood to the extent that I was, I invested myself in what I was doing in order to bring her joy. And I wanted to take care of her the good way. But she died before that.
Well, I'm sure she's proud of you. And it sounds like she taught you a lot of lessons about life.
Yes, she did.
Is there something she said to you? I know you watched her, you know, hustle Observed. Or whatever you want to say it. Is there something she said to you, like, you know, like, don't say no or keep going? Is there some sort of mantra? And I don't know if it's probably not in English, but maybe there's a translation.
In
Is there
Creole.
Something she said to you in Creole that, like,
I mean, I'm always bringing her up in my conversation. Just like today, we were talking about relationships and she always taught us, you know, if you can do these two things, you will always make a partner happy. Feed him, take care of the belly, and take care of the underbelly.
Elsie.
No, I'm sorry.
No, that's hilarious. Yeah. No, don't be sorry. That's hilarious.
But this is like sort of those things. And then she always taught us to respect our elders, no matter, and she said, no matter if the person see 1 minute before you were born, they have some sort of knowledge that you can pick up from them. So there is the respect and discipline. My father was a super disciplined person. My father was a black and white person. It's either this or that. There was no in between. So my mom was the balance in his life to say, okay, leave them alone, you know, it's okay for them to sleep an hour more. My father, every 4 in the morning, my father was up, he drank his tea, and then he did like certain routines. It's like every morning, like for years, my father ate the same breakfast. We have something in Haiti called bread soup. Every morning, my father, and he never got tired of it. Never got tired. So it's like there are like certain things that, you know, about the respect and discipline. My father was a very disciplined man. I'm disciplined in some ways, but not disciplined in some other ways. But I am okay with who I am. But at the same time, looking back, I'm like, wow, my mom was a perfect balance in the house.
Yeah,
kind of.
Well, and it sounds like she, and I don't know, but maybe broke stereotypical roles too, because isn't it always like they say women are supposed to do this and be in the house, and then men are supposed to be here. So your mom was basically like, I'm gonna be a businesswoman. And that's what she did.
Yes. I don't think she said that though. I think she basically took on doing certain things to generate income.
To survive.
To survive. Yeah. Or to care for us. And then she was always strict on our schooling. Even when she didn't know how to read and write, she will check the professor, how are they doing in school? Do they talk a lot in class and stuff like that? She always feared that we will end up the way she was brought up, or the way she was, without not knowing how to read and write. But my mother never gave up also. She used to be in the choir at church singing, and you know she doesn't know what she's singing, but her book was open. Here she was. And then as a kid, you're like, oh my gosh, my mom doesn't know how to read. And then all your friends basically saw your mom. At one point, I started being embarrassed, and I'm like, now I'm like, wow, it takes God for you to
open. She couldn't even read what she was singing, and
Just blabbing.
Just like, I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna do it. She used to feed prisoners.
Tell me about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, every Sunday, she will cook meals for prisoners. Cook big meals and just like carry it to prison, because prison in Haiti is not like in the U.S. I'm sure it's worse now from the stories that I'm hearing. People are being raped in prison, but back then it was like they didn't have food or they didn't have toiletries, and then people will donate, will bring. So out of her good heart, my mother will just cook every Sunday afternoon and take the food to the prison to feed prisoners.
Well, and it sounds like you learned, so there's the business part, there's also being community oriented, which is what you are as well. And
yes.
So knowing that you can be both, you can be a business person, you can also be a community person.
Exactly.
They don't have to be separate.
No, they don't have to be separate. I am barely coming out. I mean, I've had that vision. I want to be involved in, it's not an activist, but I want to be a part of helping the homeless community. We can talk for years about that, my personal struggle. So I want to be able to help homeless women. Because I've had a few ups and downs in not having a place to sleep, not having money to pay for my rent, being kicked out of apartment, being kicked out at people's houses because I couldn't. I just, especially after my mother passed away, it was like I didn't know how I was going to live because we were so close in terms of her say and everything that I need to do, or in every decision that I needed to take. I didn't know what I was going to, how I was going to continue to live. And then mentally, it was like, kind of like a big shock, a big trauma. When I got the call, I was waiting for the max, at the max station that my mother just passed away. And I was heading to a meeting with Feed the Mass with Jacob.
Yeah, I know Jacob.
And then basically was a shock. That day I went for the first time and just shaved my head bald. Out of frustration. It was kind of my way to grieve. I didn't know how I was going to continue to live. So after that, my life just like went downstream.
And you were houseless for a bit, right? And
what?
You didn't have a house.
I was renting.
Yeah.
And I got kicked after my mother passed away. My mother passed away in February. So I couldn't keep up with working and focusing. I got kicked out in June. I couldn't function. But I am happy that I went through all these turmoil and challenges, because out of those same experiences, I am pulling from them to tell women going through hardship. This is how you do it. Because you sometimes you are listening to motivational speakers and they keep saying like, get up and do it. You can do it. You are the master of your life. This is such
a lie.
Just believe. No.
Yeah, put on a smile.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
This is such a lie. I'm working on a book right now that I hope that it's not going to offend anybody, but it's my book, so I can call it whatever I want.
Yeah.
It's called Between Getting Off Your Ass and Do Something.
Yeah.
Between Getting Off Your Ass and Do Something. So I'm right in the crack like between, because you cannot walk to somebody dealing with some mental trauma, get off your ass and do something. There is a process. There is a healing process that needs to take place. First of all, the person must recognize that they need to change, or they need to do better. Until they can take that responsibility to change, nothing is going to happen. You can be screaming at them. You can have a committee of 20 people go in and say, hey, we come here to help you get off your ass. It's not going to happen.
And then the other thing is, when they're ready for that, there's this assumption that one thing will help. You know how people say, like, oh, learn English or get a job or we'll give you food, you'll be okay. You know, it's no, this is someone who's experienced trauma.
Exactly.
And how do they have clothes?
Exactly.
Do they have transportation?
Do they have food?
They have food.
Yeah.
You know, someone will say, oh, go on a job interview. Well, what if they don't have a computer or a phone? How is the job interview, a job interviewer going to get a hold of them?
Yeah.
So it's just, what I'm getting at is like a person, it needs to be, they call it like wraparound services. You know, it needs to be, what are all the things this person needs?
Mm-hmm.
And taking them as they are. So
take them as they are. You just hit it. Because when somebody is going to a dark times or a dark hour, first of all, there is so much shame associated with them and their mind. Because most humans wants to be independent. They want to work. They want to provide for themselves. I'm not talking about living lavishly, but at least there is a minimum that the regular human wants to provide for themselves, to feel like I'm living, I am taking care of myself, I am paying my rent, I'm paying my bills, I'm being a good citizen. So before we put our kind of like snobbish judgment on people, if we take two steps back and say, wait a moment, why is that person behaving that way? Or why are they showing the way, are they showing up the way they are showing up? Because there should be a background that caused somebody to do certain things or act a certain way, or hurt other people, for example. At one point, I was hurting other people. I'm like, because I was like in such a dark moment, I didn't want help. I didn't want anybody to see my doo-doo. I want to be in a corner and by myself. Do you want me to help you? No, but it's because I was trying to protect my integrity, or me as a human, or what makes me a human. So there is all that. I mean, there are all these elements. If we try to understand or take a few steps back before we judge somebody, we will realize that they don't need our comments. They don't need direction that we think they should take for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just like to listen.
Yeah.
If you need somebody to talk, sometimes the person doesn't even need money. And here you are like throwing money in the hole. It's like, if I can just find somebody to just vet, or somebody who will listen to me, like, talking.
Because when you're in that spot, you feel as if nobody cares, you know, and that's a big part of it as well.
Even when people care, or sometimes people care in the wrong format, they care in the wrong format, and then the person who is hurting interprets the help that the other person is trying to give to them as a judgment, as an attack. Even when the other person is not even thinking about that, but because they are going to what they are going to, so they automatically perceive perceive that, why are they doing that? Why are they giving me money? Why are they telling me to just like take a shower? It's none of their business or something. The right question should be, how do you think I can help you?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you think I can
which
help
is,
you?
Which is, people talk about equity, you know, a lot, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. that's true. Equity is not describing or prescribing to someone else.
Exactly.
Asking them what they need mm-hmm. and then meeting them where they need
where
to
they
be.
Where they need to yeah. be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it takes a lot. Now that I've been training my mind, at least for the past 3 years, I have been monitoring Elsie. I'm like, nope, that's not your place.
Yeah. And we all have judgments. That's just part of the human condition. But
yeah.
it's what we do with that or what we say. So how do you go from, you know, grieving your mom, being in and out of housing?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like maybe, did you live in your car? Or
I live in my car for yeah. a moment. I mean, shout out to the Tigard Public Library. That's where I used to go to cleanse myself. Mm-hmm. And then I'll sit there all day long reading. But reading, not really reading, is like sitting to show that I'm doing something, because my mind was going in all sorts of directions. I cannot remember exactly how it happened. I was working. I've always been curious about how it will be to share Haitian cuisine with Portland. At that time, Mathilde was already at the Portland Mercado selling Haitian food. She had a food court there. And then in 2007, I started being sick with digestive issues. At that time, I was working at a financial firm. So my life at that time looked something like that. I will be running to the emergency room if I ate something that I was allergic with, and then go back to work after 2 or 3 days, and then go to doctor's appointment, and then eat something that I was allergic with, and then go back to the hospital. It was like a 5 year back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then I ended up with a colon surgery in 2011, 6 years down the road. And then after my surgery, and I found out it was my conditions was all food allergy related. I decided that I was going to cook food so people don't have to go to the hospital. People with sensitive bellies, they don't have to go to the hospital every 2 days if they've eaten something they're allergic with. So,
and this is before you found out about your mom, and
yeah, that was before.
Okay,
that was before.
And so you're sitting in the Tigard Library or wherever,
mm-hmm.
or your car at night. How did you go from that
to opening a business? So my business started at one point. I was working. I got a job as a cashier. Okay, let me take that back. After the whole thing, living in my car and all of that, I met somebody. Let me see. I met somebody at George Fox. I was doing my undergraduate studies there while I was still working at that financial firm. And then I met somebody, a friend from school. And then they moved to Indiana. And then at that time, I started sewing because I was sewing with his wife. I have so many stories to tell. So, and then when I came back from Haiti, because I went to Haiti to visit my mother. When I came back from Haiti, that was when I got fired from that financial firm. Right before I left for Haiti, I got a $10,000 raise. I went over there and I said, okay, we're going to fix that door. We're going to fix this because I'm going to be $10,000 richer. And then I came back the following day, still dealing with jet lag. I got called into a meeting. They were taping the meeting. My boss was like, is it okay that I record that meeting? I'm like, wow. What's going on? So basically, I got fired, still dealing with jet lag from Haiti.
And witnessing. You spent the money that you were going to get.
Yeah, exactly. And then I just graduated from my undergraduate, from my project management degree. And then I already signed up for the MBA program at Josh Fox. Without a job, I said, you know what? I signed for the MBA. I am going to show up to my classes.
And which you just finished, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So I went to class, not knowing how I was going to pay for my degree. But that was when I started sewing. So this is where the sewing came back. I started sewing like a madwoman. I'm like, I'm going to pay for my classes out of pocket through my sewing. I used to sell my dresses. I was doing high-end little girl dresses, matching hats, matching purses, and then the whole fufu at the bottom. I managed to pay for a year out of pocket.
Wow. So, and you went to markets and things like that?
Yeah, I was going to market. But at that time, basically, it was just my mother showing up. I'm surprised nobody asked me for my business name. That's not true. I had a business name, but it was not legal. I'm so sorry you are.
Oh, it's okay. I don't judge. Did you call it something though? Like
it was my mother's name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Heureuse, which means happiness. In French, Heureuse means happiness.
What was the name?
Heureuse, H-E-U-R-E-U-S-E. That's a French name. It means happiness in French. So that was the name of my clothing line. First of all, I mean, I learned from it too. You cannot give your business a name that people, everybody who buys a piece of thing that you saw with the tag. What does that mean? And then at one point I'm like, oh my gosh, why? So I was selling at farmers markets, and then with the same money I went back and paid for my tuition, $900 class at that time. A credit, not a class.
Credit, yeah, that's
yeah,
incredible. That's,
a credit, that's, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you had to have done pretty well selling dresses.
Oh yeah. If I was selling dresses back then and I meet you, that would be nice on your niece. Your friend has a niece, right? Your cousin have a daughter. So that was the way I sold my dresses. And then at one point I just couldn't pay for my rent. I don't know, maybe it's either I was too tired selling, or it's either there was a part of freaking out too. Because it was like every month, okay, I'm going to pay. At that time, I was paying $400 for $400 a studio on top of a restaurant, no air conditioning. In the summer, I mean, this is all joke. Now I'm laughing about it. Back then, it was no joke. When it was like midsummer in August and they were frying, the restaurant was running, mm-hmm. all the heat from that stove hit exactly where my bed was.
Were you right up? You were on top of a restaurant?
On top of a restaurant, yeah. I couldn't pay for the $400. That's where I started panicking. And then those friends that I was sewing with moved to South Bend, Indiana. And then when I explained to them, I'm like, well, I'm not selling as much. I'm not doing as much. And then they say, why don't you come live with us or something? You can sew. And they had their sewing business there.
In Indiana or where?
In Indiana, yeah. So what I did, I sold what I can sell, what I could sell back then. And I moved to Indiana. I took the train and here I go to Indiana.
And you hated it?
Hated it, that's one. Hated it, that's one. Second, the wife had some sort of mental bipolar issue. Mm. And then I got kicked out in the middle of the snow in Indiana. And when it's snow, it's not like the dust, the white dust that we see in Portland. Inches and inches and inches of snow. But this is like a long story. And I ended up in the streets of Brooklyn.
New York.
Yeah. Because I had some childhood friends.
Mm. And this was before Creole Me Up.
Before Creole Me Up.
This is before your mom passed
yes.
away.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I went to New York, left everything that I left Portland with because I couldn't take them in the train. And then I spent 8 months in Brooklyn, New York, about 5 months in Brooklyn and then 3 months upstate New York. And then people keep saying, you're gonna find a job. You were working in a financial firm. You are going to find a job. And I just couldn't find a job. It's either I was scared of the New York life or it just didn't happen. Plus, I was very depressed. I just lost everything to my name. Mm. I was very depressed. And then I was in New York with no money. It's like I was living at the mercy of my friends that I was living with. So I went to New York 8 months in. And then what always scared me in New York, people are always running. And then the Oregonian in me or the Haitian in me is like, why are you people running so much? Mm-hmm. It's like you're standing waiting for the bus. It's like people are like running. And then I felt like people.
Everyone's rushing. Yeah.
Everybody's rushing. And then for some reason, I got the feeling that everybody wants to fight. And I cannot fight. Everybody's like right there on your face. Sometimes I'm like, my brain is saying, can you take just like one step back? It's like, I feel like everybody was like right there. And then I tried to get used to the life, style of living in New York. I just couldn't.
Mm. It's also cold.
It's also very cold, but they don't care about the cold. How cool it is. And then at one point I said, you know what? I'm heading back to Oregon. And then my godmother gave me $50 and I came back to Oregon. And then the friends hooked me up with a nonprofit. They do coaching, business coaching. And then I was hired as an admin person. But I was required to be there, but I was still a contractor. And I was being paid $250 every 2 weeks, And then at one point, I'm like, if I don't find a job, but my brain though was like in all sorts of directions. I didn't feel I was depressed, but I didn't want anybody to know that I was depressed. So on the surface, I was very aggressive because I didn't want to see what I didn't want anybody to see what was going on inside of me.
Mm.
And then I decided if I don't have a second job, I was going to really be in the street. Well, I got a job as a cashier at one of the grocery store. We can take 2 years talking. So I got a job at the grocery store and then I spent 8 months working there, but that was when really, so the surgery happened before Indiana, and then I kept thinking, I'm going to make food for people to live on. So while I was working as a cashier, I was trying to write that book, finish that book. I want my mom to see it. I want to make my mom proud. And then, boom, I went to Haiti, and then she died. I went to Haiti after Matthew, when that hurricane destroyed.
Haiti has had so many things nonstop.
I cannot even recognize my own country.
Yeah.
I cannot even recognize my own country. But the book was published. Basically, I wrote it in the bus because I didn't have a car. I came here with $50 in my pocket from New York. I wrote the book basically in the bus, taking the bus and the max and train and all of that. And then my mom died, and then my depression went downhill in terms of dark. It's like dark. Very dark. I felt like I was in a hole, in a dark hole. I lost something that is so precious to me, was gone. So I gathered the strength to start pulling pop-ups, doing pop-ups. So I was doing pop-ups monthly.
And you had some market experience because you had sold dresses before that.
Yeah. I had some market experience. and I knew not to call it my mother's name because I was not going to fall on my forehead at Farmers Market explaining what the name means. So
So how did you get Creole Me Up?
Creole Me Up is like a lot of brainstorming. There was Creole Cravings. Creole this, Creole that, Creole this. And then when the Creole Me Up come up, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to Creole everybody up in Portland. And then and then the name stuck. And then at my pop-ups, I didn't have any. Even when I was cooking with my mother since I was a child, but I didn't have any of that profit margin, like the business kind of like built to run a food business.
Mm-hmm.
So I have made a lot of mistakes. I remember after my pop-ups, while I was still broke, I will be walking to my house with $20 because I didn't charge enough. I didn't do my calculations right. So I made a lot of mistakes, a lot of trials and errors, but I still show up.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people, you need to show up. You need to show up for yourself. You need to show up to as a respect for yourself. No matter what happened, if you are alive, you need to show up. So that's how Creole Me Up
was
built.
Well, that sounds
built.
Like your mom.
Yeah.
Same kind of.
Yes.
Same kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you get? I know you have a product line, and you can talk a little bit about that. But I mean, where did you get the ideas for the products, the recipes, that sort of thing?
The recipe development is my strength. So I like making unique flavors built onto what I observe in the kitchen in Haiti when I was a kid. So the names, most of them come from my customers. And then I'll be like, hey, I want to call this, for example, Mango Lala. What do you think? Oh my God, it sounds like a music partition or music piece. I like it. And then the Pickles for the Wimps, the name come from a client, a customer bought a jar. And then she was saying that she came back and said, oh my God, this is so spicy. You need to make one for the Wimps. And I'm like, that's it. I'm going to make one for the Wimps. So there is a Pickles for the Wimps and people just laugh. So I like the fact that not only the products are delicious, but they bring so much joy to people in terms of the name. The way that I talk to people, because I try to be myself. And I'm like at farmers markets, I'm like, what are you doing here? Having a Haitian woman yell at you in an accent that early in the morning, and people just crack up, and then they'll be coming back for more, refer their friends and families, picking up products for their neighbors. So just right now, a customer just met me in front of you for their products. in front of the studio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of like what I was saying too about the authenticity piece. It's you with your stories selling your products.
Yes.
You know, there's no illusion. There's no, I'm someone else. So I think people really love that, especially now, you know, to actually buy from someone who is, it's basically supporting your dream. It's basically
my spicy dream. It's not just a dream.
So can you tell us, I mean, all the different things, you know, there's sauces, drink mixes. Can you kind of over for people who are listening, different products?
I started with the pickles, and then I started selling pickles from my pop-ups. People were like, I would like to have that in the fridge. So pickles, it's pickled vegetables. There's cabbage in it, carrot. Mine has green onions. Some people don't put scallions, but mine has scallions and shallots, vinegar and lime juice. Some people don't like the pickle vinegar, but in Haiti, the fermentation is just a process that is foreign to us. Mm. I didn't know fermentation until I came to the U.S. Even when I first came in, I'm like, oh my God, this thing stinks. How can people put that in their mouth? And then I realized that this is good probiotic for your gut. About 8 months ago, I started playing with fermenting. I did a fermented asparagus. I have a cauliflower, asparagus and cauliflower, and then pickle. But with a Haitian twist, with a Haitian twist in it. So all my names, the name of my products are strange. Like my pickle, we call it Tickle My Creole Pickle. People just...
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, but it's just for fun, you know, just for fun. Why be serious all the time if you can laugh or you can make somebody laugh? Yeah.
And besides the pickled items.
I have a line of marinades. I have 5 of them and I'm working on my version of a Haitian jerk. I'm not going to call it jerk because I feel like I am...
That's Jamaican, right?
That is Jamaican. So I better call it something else. I think I'm going to call it the Maroon. M-A-R-O-O-N. Is that how you pronounce it?
Maroon?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the red. Like red?
Yeah.
Dark red?
Yeah. Maroon, yeah.
Dark red, almost purple.
And then those were like slaves also that freed themselves too in Haitian history, the Maroon slave. So I think I'm going to go that direction with the name because I don't want to step on the Jamaican stores.
So how many marinades?
I have 5 right now. I have a marinade with an attitude. I have a sassy and pink marinade. I have a Creole wob. And I have an apis. And then I have a marinade with sass. And then
that's what it's called, marinade with sass?
Yeah, with sass because it is spicy. So you got a lot of salt. And then I have infused oil. And then on the bottle, we have that saying that goes, don't take this oil home to your mama because it is so spicy. Yeah. Your mama will be like, why did you get that oil in my house? Because it's so spicy. And then we have cocktail mixes. We are about to give them a big makeover at the beginning of 2023. We have 3 of them. We have a gold digger, a spicy Caribbean, and a drop that bit. With bit.
What's
bit,
the
bit.
Last one? Drop that what?
Drop that bit.
Oh, B-E-E. Bit. Oh, okay, I thought you said another word.
No. Drop that bit. B-E-E-T, but it's beat based.
Oh, beat, like Beats by Dre.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then 3 years ago, I started making hummus around the holidays because people meet and they need good condiment. So right now we have three of them. We have a pumpkin hummus, a beet hummus, and a carrot hummus.
Yes. Those sound good.
Yes. Yeah, I'll bring you some.
Yeah. How do you know which products to make or not make? You know, do you just come up with an idea and then see how it sells?
I have made a few mistakes when I first started. I'll think of something, play with it a little bit, and it tastes good for me, but I didn't do my market research. And then I'll go out, print the labels. No, pay a graphic designer to design the label, pay for the label, and then order labels in bulk, and then to realize that people are not interested in it.
Is it because it's too spicy?
No, it's just like I have a pickle yellow onions. I sing to people, I dance to people, I wave at people. They were not interested in the pickle yellow onions.
They don't want the onion breath.
No. Maybe, but they were not interested. So I went and I said, oh, let me try the red onions. And then everybody fall in love with them. So from that, I learned, I'm like, there is no way I'm going to be spending $600 on labels, another $300 with a graphic designer, never again. So right now, if I'm thinking about a product, if I'm thinking about introducing a new flavor or a new product, before I spend the money on all of that, I spent a good month testing it out. Hey, I'm working on this. Will you give me your opinion? And then you will not imagine. People will tell you about how their dogs will like it. Or what their dogs wouldn't like it. I mean, not like
this is a good thing or a bad thing.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing because it's like free marketing.
Yeah.
Free marketing or free market research information that they just spill their mind.
I'm happy to be a food taster as good. Well. So.
Yeah, because I'm always working on recipes.
So a lot of people who are getting into the food and beverage industry, they don't realize that there's lots of rules on, you know, safety and health. And then the kitchen that you make food in, you have to think about that. So can you kind of talk a little bit about that? Like, did you have to learn about food processes and how to follow all those rules?
Well, I have a degree in food science.
Of course you do.
Yeah, so that kind of like give me a little kind of like step up in the game because I have a good understanding of product in terms of food processing, the safety of food processing and all of that. But for somebody who is thinking about getting in the food industry, I will encourage them to do kind of like a background education of food processing. In the kitchen, every product needs to have my inspector's approval before I can bring it out to the people. And then the inspectors need to visit your workspace to kind of like mark you up or mark you down. But the inspector that I work with, she doesn't do it that way. She say, oh, I think that you will need to, sometimes she just say, this needs to be changed. Sometimes she say, if you do this, it'll be better in terms of food safety. But in general, before you put a food product out, you need to have it. I mean, the person needs to have it, to have an okay by the inspector. And then that same food science background, kind of like giving the idea of the pH testing. If you have low pH or product, if the acidity, if you have low pH, you have a chance to, for a longer shelf life. If you have a higher pH, then your product longevity might shorten, like my tree hammers. I'm very, not only have the date on the lid, I make sure to tell people you need to eat that within the next 3 weeks.
Mm.
So that if so
I'm
that
the person
they know.
That eats in one sitting. So
I eat something in one sitting too, yeah. But there is all of that. And then in my drinks, there is a small bottle of Haitians Gone Wild. I have a
Haitians Gone Wild.
Yeah.
So and tell us about that.
The Haitians Gone Wild basically is kind of a drink that my mother used to make when we were kids with soursop, mango, guava, all those tropical fruits in one little bottle for people to enjoy.
Sounds really good.
Oh, it is delicious.
And it's a thing I can mix with alcohol.
Ha. Any alcohol you like, you can add it. So for Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving, we will be reintroducing our coconut line, which is kind of like a pina colada, but it's not a pina colada, but it's a Haitian version with coconut milk, condensed milk, and all the Haitian spices. Mm. And then so I have a plain coconut and a coconut chocolate. So I'm gonna be reintroducing. So last year was the first year that we introduced them to people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
Yes, it is very good.
So you really got it together. You basically, like you said, you had a good attitude. Even when you were hurting through fear and pain, you still showed up the best you could be.
Mm-hmm.
Is it you started at one market, you were doing more markets? Like, how did you realize, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is the business, I can lean into this?
Actually, my confidence grew. I have 5 years in business, going on 6 years. Last year, when my business crossed the six-figure line for the first time, I'm like, oh, I can do this. So that went really my confidence. So this is to show you that it took me time to work through the layers and sift through the layers. I am grateful for where I am now. But looking back, I'm like, wow, what if I was not carrying all that emotional baggage and mental baggage? What will I have done in terms of accomplishment? But I was dealing with a lot in my personal life. It's one thing, homelessness is not having a home to sleep. So this is something that people really need to understand. It's not just not having a place to sleep. There is that bondage that you don't see, that nobody see. But the person who is going through the challenges knows that they feel trapped. It's like once you cannot take care of yourself, it's like you're like, why
bother? Yeah, everything seems daunting.
Exactly.
Even small things.
It's like I remember when I was like broke. People will be like, and I'll be taking three buses with $2.50 to go to my meeting, to go see Sarah Massoni at the Food Innovation Center. And then people will be like, why don't you pay a Uber? And I was even at Aloha Beaverton. That's a $35.
That's a long, long bus ride.
I'm like, that's a $35 Uber ride. When I cannot even eat. When I cannot even buy a burger, I'm going to pay $35 for a ride. But you don't want to get into that conversation. You're ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
Why cannot I pay a $35 ride for myself?
I've had people when I was, you know, unemployed or I took 9 bar exams to become a lawyer.
Yeah.
That's not. But there were people who were just like, can't your dad buy you a car? Or can't your family give you money? And I'm like,
You see?
My parents are sharing a 1985 car that's broken down. You know, like, no, that's not the way that it works.
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, but that's the thing with you is you were so determined that regardless of where you were at, regardless of the pain and the fear, mm-hmm. you decided to move forward. You chose hope.
Yes, I chose hope. But it was not easy. It's like one day feeling hopeful and then 3 days of you beating yourself up. I'm a loser. I am this. I'm that. I will never make it. I will never do that. So there is all that mechanism that behind the door, you just cook for 3 days for a pop-up and then you go home with $20. You're like, how am I going to pay the rent? Last time I got kicked out and that was how I ended up living in Estacada. That one lady gave me permission to come spend the night and sleep so that I was not wandering in the street. During the day, I'll be at the library. But at that time, I was not into looking for work. I was a loser, but I wanted to make my mother proud to finish that book. So I was at the library trying to finish that book. If I was there for 8 hours, maybe 3 hours is like my mind wandering of why am I living? What is the purpose of me being alive? Because I cannot pay $150 at that place that I was living, that I was spending the night at. So it was a one-bedroom apartment. There was the living room. And then I was sleeping on an inflated bed on the floor. And then the lady was working swing shift. She was working, graveyard. She would be coming in the middle of the night. And then when she come, I'll be sleeping in the cold on that plastic inflated bed. And she said, I am paying most of the bills, so you cannot have hit where you were sleeping. So here I am on that plastic inflated bed, all cold on the ground. At one point that thing popped and I was like barely on the floor, sleeping on the floor. So the living room where she was sleeping, she has the heater on. And here I am sleeping in the cold on the plastic inflated bed on the floor. And then at one point I couldn't pay it. I got kicked out.
You were paying her $150?
$150. Yeah. I couldn't pay it. I was so broke. And then I ended up in Estacada because a friend, actually my best buddy, she lives in Washington now. And then she was the one person that I said, if I fall on the street, you better be here before the doctor see my panty, because my panty has a lot of holes.
Wait, what? Your panty has what?
Yeah.
Your panty has what?
Holes.
Oh, holes.
Yeah. I'm like, you better be in Portland before I am on the hospital bed. And she's always like, oh my gosh, Elsie, I'm all the way over here, 3 hours away. So she was the one to give me a ride to her mother's house in Estacada, and that's how I ended up in Estacada living, and I'm still there. Estacada is far from Portland, but what Estacada has given me is clarity, because once you get there, it's just like you're living in a farm or something. It's so out there. I am hopeful for the future. I'm hopeful considering all that baggage, I'm hopeful for what the future looks like for me. So that friend who is in Washington, and then one point she said, Elsie, I'm going to come for you. And then I'm like, well, I'm trying to finish that book. You know, I cannot leave it. Well, you can finish it here. We have extra rooms. And she came and picked me up. And then the following day, she said, well, the reason why I bring you here so I can go buy you panties. Because I know I'm not going to be, if something happened in Portland, I'm not going to be there. Plus, if I had sent you the money, you'll be buying cabbage to make pickles with it. So let's go. I want to take you panty shopping.
Oh, that's a good friend.
Yeah. So that's a good friend. And this is the same friend, too. When Creole me up, basically, I just couldn't run it in the bus anymore. And then she had an extra van sitting in front of her door, and she gave me the van, and I drove it for 2 years. Van just died, and I just bought a new car. So I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't change. When I was going through what I was going through, they were painful. But now I think that I'm equipped to look a woman in the eyes, to let her know you're not gonna die. You're not gonna die.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, you're talking about baggage, baggage, trauma, memories, all that. Mm-hmm. But it also makes you who you are.
Exactly.
And it also gives you strength and resilience.
Yes.
And you took away from it.
Mm-hmm.
You now know, one, you can survive anything.
Mm-hmm.
But you also know how to problem solve, how to be resourceful. You can help other women.
Yes.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. And people are asking, often ask me, how was your business able to survive during COVID? Because basically a lot of businesses that I knew at my level basically shut down. But I think what saved me is because I know how to make the best out of one penny. So I know how to budget, and I know how to multiply the little resources that I have from my hardships. That's how I learned the survival techniques. And then I applied that to my business. You know, I don't make big moves in my business. So you won't see Elsie renting from a commercial kitchen and jump into a building or a brick and mortar without having a long-term plan that I can. First of all, there is my A-type personality that I am controlling. and so that's one thing. Second, I always have my past so near because I don't want to fall on my forehead again. Oh. You know? So.
And what's next for you? You know, I know that I think you're already in new seasons, right? Or you're in the
I
process.
Am in new season. I've been in new season for 2 years and some.
Yeah, so talk about that. Like, you went from market to new seasons, and then what's next for you? I mean, what do you want to do?
Okay, what do I want to do? Okay, so I am at new seasons. I think last I counted, I am in 17 stores altogether in around Portland.
That's pretty amazing.
That is very amazing. And then I do pop-ups next year. It's like those big, audacious, hairy goal. I want to run a Creole Me Up restaurant for a week around Haitian Flag Day in May. So I'm working on those details right now. I want to do a panty drive for homeless women.
Panty drive?
Panty drive.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like the basic.
You can invite your friend too.
Yes, I'm going to invite my friends to do the panty drive. I want to work with nonprofits working for women. Basically, I want to do it with dignity, because no matter how somebody feel, they want to be treated with respect.
Mm.
This is something I learned from my struggle. When people are like, even with Creole Me Up, when I was trying to build Creole Me Up, why don't you get a job? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? When are you going to make enough money to live off of that, you know? So I want to treat these women with respect that I come in contact with. You will hear a lot more about me in terms of, now that my school is about to be over in December. You will see me a lot around in the community, either teaching Haitian cuisine to kids, create opportunity for women coming out of jail, coming out of bad situation. I want my business to be not only a for-profit business, I want to create a space where women can come and feel like they can be themselves, no matter what their background. I don't want, like right now, the other day, my employee said something. Okay, she decided, I'm grooming her to be my production manager. And then she came after her vacation in August and she said, you know what? I don't think pre-almeup is good for me anymore. I want to travel. And then I look at her, I say, really? Where did that come from? She said, well, during my vacation, I've done a lot of thinking and I think I want to travel. I'm like, okay, because if somebody wants to do something, no matter how painful it is, you need to encourage them and ask them, how can I help you go on your round country trip? But I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm still in school. And then a few weeks later, she came back. She said, well, I don't think I want to go. I want to leave Kriolmiab anymore. I'm like, why? Because we were just setting up plans on how to do your exit. We were getting ready to exit for your exit. And she said, the freedom I feel here, I don't think I'm going to find it somewhere else. She didn't know that. But I'm like, yes, this is what I want people to feel.
Yeah.
I want people to be free. I want you to be yourself. I want you to feel like, as a human being, you are being valued. You can grow. My recipe book is right there in front of her. Like, she came a few weeks back. She said, I found a better way to make that recipe. And I'm like, what? In my head, I'm like, wait a moment. I've been doing that since I was four. And she said, well, if we do this, like that, we'll save some time in doing this. And I'm like, go for it. If you make a mistake, we'll come back to the old ways. And then now we are doing it the way she thought works better. So I don't want to be that know-it-all person. I don't want to be a trigger for people. Like I told her, every day, the world has so much stress, so many triggers. I don't want my company to be a trigger for someone. So I want, not that I want to be a psychologist or anything, but I want people to be free to be themselves, who they were created to be, when they work around my...
Yeah, that's excellent. And not just from a work component, but in a communication component, like having the ability to talk with your team.
Yes.
They trust you. Because a lot of people will say, oh, well, they're not a friend. They're an employee, or, you know, don't get too close to them. But
no,
I don't believe that. I believe, you know, you take them as they are and who they are. And so...
Yeah.
You want to make sure they're comfortable. You want to make sure you have a good relationship.
Exactly.
So I could talk to you for 5 hours. We don't have 5 hours. So I'm going to go into, we have five questions that I ask everyone. So the first question is, what's a quote or a mantra that you live by?
Wow, there are so many.
You know, something you, or a couple, yeah, that you say to yourself.
Do what you can with what you have, the best that you can right now. So that's something my father used to always say, do what you can with what you have, because up to now, everything that I want to have for Kriolmiab, I don't have. I am glad that when I started with what I had. I didn't have a car, but there was a bus. I didn't have a $35 to pay for a Uber, but I have a $2.50 to ride the bus for 2 hours to do what I want.
Otherwise, you wouldn't do anything, right?
No, you wouldn't do anything.
You would just say, I don't have what I need.
Exactly, and, yeah. Exactly. So it's not, I didn't have the capital, the money. We had to backtrack my expenses, like some of the recipes for cooking with my mother, my first book. I had to save for months. There is a recipe in there. I saved for months. It had crab, oxtail. The one dish cost me about $120. I saved pennies to make it happen for the book. So it's that. I'll say it's that.
What's your favorite childhood memory?
Wow, childhood memories. Lately, I remember breaking fresh almonds with rocks and eat them fresh almonds from, yeah. So that's one of the memory.
What's a failure or mistake that you made that actually turned out for the best?
Mistake that I make for the best. I made so many mistakes, though. My successes, I can count them on my fingers. My failures. One is make sure that what I'm gonna do, I mean, not in all situations though, but in terms of recipe, make sure that people like what I'm gonna offer them. I might like something, but it's not gonna it's not gonna work for everybody.
What was
else
it, yellow onions?
Yeah, yellow onions, we call. I couldn't sell a jar of that thing. And then at the end, I was just, if somebody buy for $50 at the market, I say, hey, this will go well on your sandwiches.
Or it's you alone eating yellow onions.
Yeah. And then now what I do, all the labels, I just label my pots with them, my mixing bowls with them, because I didn't use it.
What issue or issues keep you up at night?
Right now, for sure, it is wrapping up on my capstone, but,
for your MBA program?
For my MBA program. I'm almost done, but, it needs to have a big presentation in a few days. I actually am very content with myself. I'm very content with myself. What doesn't keep me up at night is hoping for things that I know that I can hope, but I don't long after things that I know that I cannot afford. So I'm very happy with myself. That's how my crazy laughs at the market that people hear, they are real. They are sincere, because I don't let anything put a burden on my mind that's not necessary. So I'm in a very happy place.
That's great. That's wonderful to hear. Mm-hmm. What are you reading or watching these days?
What I'm reading right now, I just finished reading. It's a book called Identity Switch by April Mason. She is talking, this is a lady that I've been following since 2017. No, since 2007 on MySpace then.
I remember MySpace.
Yeah, I was on MySpace. I got hooked to this lady because we have the same background. Sexual abuse, survival, homelessness. She went through it all. And then in this book, she's talking about how if you want to reach a level in life, you have to mimic that level in life. It's like...
That's like the fake it till you make it.
Fake it until you make it, that type of things. But she gives you like the 1, 2, 3 on how to get there. Before my series of homelessness, I used to walk on high heels a lot. And then now my goal, one of my goals in 2023... is to start wearing heels again. So you will see me in the
That's
street
excellent.
Like
at the market or where? Anywhere.
Not at the market, maybe chopping onions at the kitchen. No. But it's like now that I know that I can make Creole Me Up work, I want to project that success image, but not in a cocky way or an arrogant way. It's like
it's for you. You worked hard to deserve
exactly
those items, or
yeah,
the shoes that you want.
So. Yeah, the shoes that I want. Or because in the past, when at one point the house that I got kicked from before that last house, I gave everything that I own to Goodwill, my jewelry, my makeup, because I'm like, why? I don't deserve anything. And then at one point I didn't have I didn't have shoes. A friend gave me one of her husband's shoes. And then here I am with that big old tennis shoes. And then at first glance, you're like, oh my gosh, where did she get that? But I was wearing it. But now that I'm at a point that I can give myself some margin to have fun. So you're going to see me on the street on high heels.
Great. I love it.
I hope I'm not going to fall on my forehead, though. But I'll practice first.
If you
first.
Fall, I'll catch you. And if you fall and you need emergency help, you'll have new panties. So
good. I like that.
And then finally, give a shout out to someone or multiple people, and also tell people how they can find you, get a hold of you, buy your products, all the things.
Yes. I would like to give a shout out to Sarah Massoni at the Food Innovation Center. She basically has seen me from the beginning when I used to carry jars and jars of products for testing and sampling at the Food Innovation Center. And she is still a mentor that I respect and who continues to invest in my life. The second person I would like to give a shout out to is Lynn Shanner. Lynn is basically the motor underneath Creole Me Up. So before I lost everything and I went homeless and I got fired and all of that, I used to cook just for fun. People will come to my house and I'll cook a feast, a Haitian feast. And then she always say, you know, you can have a restaurant, right? And I'm like, what is she talking about? Anytime I cook and she's there, she's like, you can have your own restaurant, you know? So she planted that seed.
Yeah.
And then up to date, she's in every one of my pop-ups. She's anything that I'm doing. The other day I was behind in the kitchen. She came and worked for free. To help me catch up on my production. So this is Lynn Shanner. And then I would like to make a shout out to Brian Benchlike or something like that. Brian, I'm sorry. I know you will be listening, but I'm sorry. I butchered your last name. Brian used to give me rides after my pop-ups at night.
That's amazing. Yeah,
he used to pick me up. Pick all my belongings up, pots, because I'll be at Tamale Boy, and then doing my pop-ups. And at the end of the night, I was even in Beaverton, so Brian was the person to give me a ride back and forth. I want to give a shout-out to Jaime, the owner of Tamale Boy. We met in a parking lot, and I explained to him how I would like to dream. I would like to own basically the Mercedes truck that he was serving food from to people. So if Jaime didn't pick on that desire and invited me for a breakfast, for a coffee, I didn't have any money in my pocket besides the $2.50 for the bus that morning. I went and met with him. He offered me, he was like, are you going to order anything? And then in my mind, I'm like, boy, if you know, I don't have any money. So he said, I'm going to get you something. He got me some chocolate at Pioneer Square, at the Starbucks at Pioneer Square. And then we worked out a plan, and he offered his kitchen without me having any penny.
That's amazing.
Any money. So I was at his kitchen for about a year, running my pop-ups for free. Not only he opened up his kitchen after every pop-up, he asked me, let's see what we can do better. And then, so all my budgeting for food come from Jaime. So I would like to make a big shout-out to Jaime. And then so many other people, really. Like I told people, Chris Bailey, at the Mercado he's moving to Hawaii right now. I always tell my customers that I'm just the clown running the show. Behind me there is a group of smart people that you don't see, but I'm just running the show, being a clown for all of them. So it's a lot of people. who really invested in me with their heart, open heart. One of the things that happen in trials and in hardship, you can detect a fake person from one word they let loose. You know who is being real and who is not.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these people are people who stood by their words and say, I'm with you. And then sometimes they will send you a text, like Lynn will send you a text, you know, I don't want you to answer, but I just want you to know I'm thinking of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, Lynn again, because you are in a dark hole.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. So little things like that. So I want to make a shout out to these people who really invested in me, give me room mm-hmm. to breathe. And Bethany, I would like to make a shout out to Bethany, who bought me panties when I couldn't afford.
Oh my goodness.
Panties. It's for real. You know, yeah. I mean, we are laughing about it. It is for real. Once you cannot eat, you cannot feed yourself, you cannot pay your rent, buying panties is the last thing you can think of.
People don't realize that, and a shower, socks.
Exactly.
When you have wet.
Deodorant.
Deodorant, all those things.
Yeah, yeah. A deodorant. Yeah, sometimes I couldn't buy a deodorant. I'll use the same foam from the soap to leave under my armpit. So that's why I'm going to do the panty drive. Because those are like the basic that you need or people need, but because you are living in such a scarce, dry financial situation that you are not going to spend your money on.
When you do that, let me know, because you know our firm can help, but also we have some other friends in the community that do social services.
Yes,
maybe
please.
Want to be involved as well.
So yes,
reach
yes.
out to me. How do people get
a hold
in
of
touch
me?
With you? How do they get money to you and get your delicious products?
Yes. We are going to make some changes on the website, but we have a website at the beginning of the year, but the website is www.creolmeup.com, and then our social media handle is creolmeup, both on Facebook or on Instagram. And the good thing about it, I'm my own social media manager, and then if you go to my social media, it's just a wreck show because I'm posting about the dogs and the cat and the little girl screaming. There's a squirrel in her pants or something like that. So people can reach out and then donating money. Actually, I'm glad you talk about that. Right now, there is a humanitarian crisis in Haiti. And I think UNICEF have a level. They have kind of a shot for hunger level. Haiti is on level 5, which is like near the bottom where people are going to start dying from hunger. Mm. So I cannot help the whole country, but I have friends that I grew up with that we are still very tight, that I've been helping during all those years I've been in the US. But right now, because of inflation, I can send $100 and tomorrow they broke again. I can send $50 and then they are broke again. So right now I am selling Creole Me Up t-shirts on my website so that I can use that money and then give back to my community. The good thing about it, the t-shirts were made in Haiti by Haitians.
I love that. Yeah, that's
so
wonderful.
That's how they can find me.
You are an amazing woman.
Thank you.
I'm really happy to know you. You're just amazing. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Keep working hard. I can't wait to see where you go.
Thank you. You will see me on the high heel though in 2023. This is for sure.
Everybody should be ready for that. So.
Yeah.
Hope you have a good night. Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
For doing the podcast.
So much. Yes. Thanks for having me.